Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mindshifters Radio.
Hi, and welcome to the show. Today is Thursday, August the 3rd, 2017. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. Michael, if you're talking to us, we can't hear you. Okay, well, maybe he has an issue with his phone, so I will just go ahead and do an introduction and say, if you're not familiar with our show, you can go to our website, which is www.whyagain.org, and there is a ton of information out there. There's audios, videos, there's downloads of the book in about 8 different languages, the commitment, the worksheets, everything is out there for free download. And then the radio show is here to support you. If you start doing worksheets or looking at the work and you have questions, something you don't understand, then call into the show and press 1 and ask your question, because I guarantee if you have a question, it's also someone else's question too. And so, Michael, are you back yet? Apparently not.
I am
going to assume. Oh, there you are. Welcome.
I am. Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. We're honored that you're with us today and ready to step into the next level of awakening from the sleep of the non-being mind. You know, in this work, we're looking at 2 different states of expression that are possible for us as humans. One of those states is a true human life. And we define a true human life experientially. And the experience that will give you a taste of what human life is holding the newborn child. When you hold that newborn, you get the experience of what we are designed to live as. And then there's the state of non-being, which is really a state of hypnosis. You know, in the ancient teachings, the master said transcend. They were saying put an end to the state of trance. Get out of hypnosis and wake up to who you are. And when you wake up to who you are, you will flood your physiology with neuropeptides based in love. And that will awaken a whole different state of being from the average person today. The state of hypnosis that we can be put into is pretty awesome when you realize it. I was speaking to someone yesterday and suggested that we might go in and present at a military base they were working at. And the response was, oh no, they wouldn't let you on there. They won't let anyone touch the emotions of these men and women because they represent such a deep investment in a particular state of mind that they won't even allow me as a psychologist to tinker with their state of mind. And it's just interesting to see how deeply hypnotized people can become so that the profane becomes normal, and the insane seems like a rational way to function. We see that on the national stage today, as people are, you know, making the most bizarre pronouncements as though this is what leadership of the world looks like. And it's just really crazy. We didn't get to hear from Dr. Tim yesterday, but Tim, I did finally get to watch that video that you shared about from the TED Talk, where this gentleman's talking about people living in their hallucinations. And I was particularly, if you're there, I don't know for sure, but we'll find out in a minute. But I was particularly interested in the experiment that they did, and they show this experiment where they have a person sitting in a chair, and they have them with their right hand on a table, and they have the left hand on the table, but hidden from view by a little wall. So this person can't see their own left hand. And then they put a fake hand on the table. And the person in front of them is sitting in front of them and stroking their real hand and the fake hand. So the hand that's hidden in view is being stroked by the experimenter, just being touched, just being brushed, and the fake hand is being brushed at the same time. And then someone comes up with a knife to stab the fake hand. And the person in the experiment is so convinced that the fake hand is their hand, even though they're sitting there knowing that their own hand is there out of view, that they instantly draw their real hand away from the knife as though they're drawing, as though the fake hand were their hand. I mean, it was just a really interesting portrayal to me of the depth of hypnosis that one can be put into. Now, they don't tell us exactly how long that stroking took place. From the experiment, it looked like it wasn't more than just a few seconds. It may have been a longer time that wasn't shown in the video, but whatever the time frame was, to get to the point of, like, I know this is a fake hand. I know my hand is over there on the other side of this wall where I can't see it, and yet I withdraw my hand because someone's stabbing the fake hand. I withdraw my real hand, that the mind has been convinced that this hand that's being stabbed is their own. And to me, the implications of that are so profound for our culture and our world, that when people are told something over and over and over and over and over again, that their minds produce perceptions as though those perceptions were of actuality and true. You know, I said that Hitler's head propagandist said, if you make the lie big enough and you tell it often enough, no one will question it. Everybody will believe it. And it was just, to me, that experiment was one of the most profound parts. Of course, it was nice to hear this neurobiologist who's affirming everything we've been teaching for decades and saying, yeah, hey, our labs are starting to prove that Yeshua was right. That was pretty cool. Of course, he didn't say those words, but in essence, that's what he's doing. So Dr. Tim, any thoughts? Of course, yesterday we didn't get to chat with you, and I think you maybe had some thoughts to share with us, but you were tied up and then we never got back to you. Any thoughts for us and any discussion on that particular, how that particular part of that video impacted you?
Well, I think, the whole video is just lovely because it is two different. Wait, are you there?
I am, yes.
All right. There's two different ways he's discussing how we create our perception. One is our perception of the outside world and events. And the other is we create a perception of ourselves. and all of the relative sense of experience, of being, of belonging, of acting in the world. And so, you know, the first part he's talking about how our perception of the outside world is absolutely just best guesses, because the brain doesn't receive any light. The brain doesn't receive any sound. The brain doesn't receive any physical touch. All the brain receives is stimulation through these neural chemical pathways. And when it receives that stimulation, it has to make its best guess about what that stimulation means, where it's located, how it feels, etc. And so he says in the first part of the talk that the stimulation coming in through our senses is not as important as the beliefs and the best guess approximations we make about that in terms of creating our perception. And then, of course, he takes it to the next level and says, even our belief about who we are, where our body is, where it starts, where it ends, whether it's safe, is all guesses created by guessing about stimulation. And he said, in terms of creating my sense of self, the internal perceptions, that's all regulated by trying to maintain homeostasis and safety. And that's why this person is so easily deceived in the fake hand experiment, because it, you know, it's this sense, my sense of my internal organs isn't that I know exactly where my heart is and what it's doing and where my liver is and what it's doing. I only become aware of my heart or my liver if I go into a deep meditation or if there's a problem there that's causing discomfort. And so my awareness of myself is about maintaining homeostasis and safety. And so when I see somebody stabbing something that's getting the same kind of stimulation that my hand is getting, even though they're not stabbing at my hand and I can't see my hand, I jerk back in a protective manner, because all of my sense of self, as they're studying it, is derived from that homeostasis and trying to maintain safety and security. And of course, what I like to tell people is, we have simply adopted, not adapted, not adjusted, not mediated, but simply taken the template that we use for survival in the wild and physical hurts and aches and pains, and just laid it completely over the emotional realm where it's not relevant. And we haven't done any adjustment. And so this is why when I start to feel anger or fear or sadness at an intense level, I might, if I haven't been trained into the fact that I'm the one creating that sensation, I might easily be misled to think something on the outside is causing it, and literally be willing to go to war or literally attack somebody physically to try and end my internal pain, because it was all derived from this internal sense of homeostasis and safety. So it makes really good sense about why we have people who aren't aware of the true nature of the origins of their pain and how they've misperceived it as a physical threat, when simply it's a little bit of irritation or a little bit of sadness or a little bit of depression or a little bit of anger. And if it's been misperceived as a safety issue, why they would escalate all the way to physical violence. So that's my offering on that part.
Yes, it's so powerful. Say again, Tim?
And why I think it's so important that you're doing what you're doing and trying to help people understand how it all works. and that they're not being threatened from the outside. Their pain is not being caused from the outside.
Right. And that by not resolving their pain, they can actually set up the energetic dynamics by spraying the energy of their pain out on people. They can actually set up the result that they're so afraid of, that they actually create that result. They do behaviors unconsciously. They move in the direction of whatever it takes to produce that result that they've been hypnotized into believing is inevitable. And then it becomes self-fulfilling prophecy because it becomes inevitable by their own behaviors and their actions and the energies that they're radiating out into the world. So it's so important to recognize that forgiveness is going inside of oneself and removing what never belonged. There's some other research that I've been looking at, and there's a little critter that's called a prairie vole. And it's kind of like a small mole type creature. And this prairie mole is a creature that once it mates for life with the other vole that it mates with. And what they're finding is that there's a neurotransmitter. We've been talking more and more about how neurotransmitters or informational molecules are simply reflections of compressed thoughts. And so this vole mates, and they find that once it mates, there's an increase in oxytocin, and that oxytocin, they're suspecting, or they're starting to prove, is the thing that causes them to mate for life. And it's is a something that creates that kind of connection that keeps these two little creatures together for life and actually has them, you know, cooperatively building a nest and raising young and protecting each other, you know, all sorts of interesting behaviors go along with it. And there's another creature very close in relationship called a prairie vole. And the prairie vole doesn't do that same behavior. The prairie vole does not mate for life. If it gets an opportunity to mate, you know, male finds a female, it mates. It mates. But interestingly enough, what they found is if they allow, and apparently the two voles, these two little creatures, have to be in each other's space for a certain period of time. It appears to be something like about 6 hours. And if they're in each other's space for 6 hours, and then they put an injection of oxytocin in the male and they mate, then this prairie vole, which never mates for life, all of a sudden mates for life. So, you know, you wonder what's contained in that informational molecule that makes a connection that says, I am now true to this relationship with this female, as opposed to I have no integrity in my relationships, and, you know, just the implications that has. And these states of hypnosis, you know, oftentimes people say, well, you know, a young man grows into maturity and the hormones start to rage. And what are hormones? Hormones are just thoughts. They're just compressed. You know, if you go to the opening words in the book of John, where we're told it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh, it doesn't say that. It says, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. So these hormones are simply compressed thoughts, and if one is repeatedly assaulted, and I use that word fairly consciously in this particular context, if a young man is repeatedly assaulted by a culture that says his job is to go out and mate with as many females as he can, not his job is to create relationship and a life based in love and a home and take care of children, then that neuropeptide they call hormone starts to rage, and, you know, results happen. And once again, it takes us back to the importance of forgiveness, because it is through forgiveness that we go inside ourselves at depth and create an increasingly intense ability or skill set of being able to go within ourselves and remove those things, those neuropeptides, those unconscious genetic thoughts tend to run our lives. You know, if generation after generation after generation of humans was, you know, promiscuous, and then there are neuropeptides, there are information molecules that tend to be passed, the energetic dynamics of that is passed on through the genes, and then when something resonates those genes, my take is that the activity, and I don't know what the scientists out of the laboratory would say about it, but the activity, the frequency of that gene coming into action is going to cause the proteins within our structure to assemble themselves in a certain way according to the pattern of the thoughts resonated out of the genes, and we're going to have the expression of a neuropeptide for either being true in relationship and having integrity and monogamy in relationship, or doing something different. And that many people are driven, or most of us are driven by whatever happens to be moving us, and whatever our heritage happens to be, if it moves, it runs us. And if it runs us and it's not like love, then we don't get to live out the truth of who we are, sourcing our thoughts, sourcing our lives from choice, from this presence of love that we are designed to be, and having thoughts that support that and bring that into expression so that we can create a culture, create a family system, create a community, create a way of thinking that is true to the truth of who we are as love and the natural behaviors that come along out of that expression of love. And so, you know, it's to me, it's like it's just building a bigger and bigger and bigger picture. And listening to that gentleman's presentation was a really quite a delightful piece in the puzzle to hear that affirmation. And the more and more we learn about it, the more the ancient teachings from the first century Aramaic Yeshua become so clearly visible and so deeply genius in their roots, that if we uncover them and learn to use the tools that come with those teachings, that life becomes more fulfilling, more alive, more joyous. I ran into someone the other day here in Asheville, where we're doing our workshops. By the way, if anybody is in the Asheville area, come join us tonight, tomorrow night, for two more free workshops in our series of five. And then, of course, Saturday we'll be doing Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. But this was a person who had done some of my work 25 years ago in South Florida. And when I got into a conversation, you know, this is someone that had come to some of my workshops way back when, and I never heard from them again. And here we reconnect 25 years later. And this person said, you know, you don't know this about our meeting, but your work back 25 years ago saved my life. Now, I didn't ask, and it wasn't volunteered exactly what was happening, but it was a person who picked up the tools and put them to use and literally recognized that they changed the inclinations, the thought inclinations within them that, at least according to their assessment of their lives at that time, would have led to their death. And here they are now later, you know, 25 years later, thriving and enjoying life. So it's interesting when people run into the tools and you just never know. And that's one of the reasons why we keep suggesting start a support group, share the tools with somebody. You know, even the briefest exposure to the core of the forgiveness process can have such profound influences on someone's life. And here's what I know: when it has that profound an influence on someone's life, it's stored in their genes and it becomes available to their whole bloodline. To me, that's the importance of the work that we're doing, and why we're committed to making sure that it gets into the hands of every heart, mind, and being on the planet. So any other thoughts in that direction for you, Tim?
Well, my thoughts are about how in my own work recently, I was talking on the show on Monday, and then we talked a little bit about it on Tuesday, that I had been listening to the old archives, and in 2011, when the show first began, I shared some series of worksheets I'd done. And one of the things that happened when I listened to it again 6.5 years later is I got some new insights. And so we were talking about my dad and the power person dynamic and how when certain kinds of stress would come up for him, he would leave in one way or another. He would have a drink, or he would go into the den to work, or he would go to work. And so as I was listening to that series of shows over the weekend, I got another level of insight about his power person dynamic and the leaving. And the piece that was new to me, it wasn't new news, but I integrated it differently, was all of a sudden it popped into my head, oh my gosh, here's another way that his power person dynamic got started, because when my father was 9 years old, his father died of a heart attack. So his father's stress level went up, and his father did the ultimate leaving. He died. So that's how I come by this honestly, through the bloodline, just it's what happens. My power person had a power person who had a power person, etc. So I got that insight, and it was integrating with me. And then I realized I had a present-day dynamic going on where somebody wanted to engage with me, and instead of just saying no, I said, well, I'll think about it. And as I thought about it more and more, I realized I had an emotional hang-up about this. So I wasn't pulling the trigger to say, yes, okay, I'll move forward, and I wasn't saying, no, I'm done. So I started doing my own work on this. And yesterday morning, after some worksheets on Tuesday and reaching a different level of clarity, I had my friend do this energy work with me, with his, it's very parallel to the mind shifter, I'm sorry, the reality management wake-up sheet process, where I put aside all the logical stuff and just ask to be shown the hidden part of my mind that's creating this blockage or this upset. And what I saw in when I'm asking to be shown was myself dealing with my father when I was 4 years old, and that the difficulty my father had in dealing with loss and grief and abandonment that he came by naturally was part of what was resonating with me in the real world today as a 63-year-old thinking about dealing with somebody in a business deal, because that person has had horrible grief loss in recent times, and that energy is all over. That energy is triggers me, and my issues with being unable to fix and heal my father from 4 years old and on, and that level of insight left this clean and open space for me to start dealing with this adult today in a completely different fashion. And
powerful.
Understanding that as I move forward, I may get triggered, but now I know it's not about the interactions between me and this other adult. It's about my sensitivity to dealing with people who have unresolved grief issues and my own unresolved grief issues as a result of that. So for me, there's the benefit of putting my work out there to get other perspectives and opinions. There's the benefit of working in the support group. There's the benefit of having the radio show for input. And there's the benefit of reviewing the patterns that I've been through and understanding that if I was dealing with a pattern of an issue 5 years ago, it's very likely to raise its head again. And it's okay. It's just me getting it at a different level or a different flavor or a different variety, and I welcome the chance to resolve it at another level. So that's my offering.
Fabulous. And, of course, the beauty of doing each of those levels of work is each time you become more empowered to be the space for the healing of that kind of pain and grief. It's part of the process of being able to hold to that act of love that resolves those dynamics for yourself and for others. So it's a powerful way, you know, doing one's own work is a powerful way to be empowered to heal, as we talk about in our Empowered to Heal workshop.
Awesome.
Well,
we did have a caller.
All right.
I'll tell you what, let's go ahead. Let's take our caller, Jean.
Area code 336, you're on the air. Is this Tracy?
Yes, it is. Hi, y'all.
Hey, welcome, young lady. Good to hear your voice.
Thanks. Good to hear y'all. I was on yesterday, and Jeannie was talking about that movie, Inside Out, and she was explaining about words and emotions and thoughts, and then you had a distinction that you added, and you explained it. And I was wondering if you could explain it again, the difference. I wasn't clear. Using like an example from, let's say, like I'm irritated because I'm supposed to be on a call and my mom showed up unannounced, or, you know, some situation that would be like a real worksheet, and apply what you were explaining to like a real life situation. Or I also had the thought when Dr. Tim was talking, I also couldn't fix or save my father. And so that's a lot of worksheets that I've done. But that issue is still there. So that could be another one you could use, or you could just make one up. But I was wondering if you could take that explanation and put it into a real situation, because I kind of got lost in the wording of the intellectual aspect of it versus how you actually apply it in real life.
Well, the first thought that comes is that you might want to watch the movie Saving Mr. Banks.
Okay.
If you haven't seen it yet, or if it's been a while since you've seen it, it's very powerful. It's a true story of Walt Disney and what he went through with the author of the book, Mary Poppins, and what it took for him to make that movie. And it was all about, you know, Saving Mr. Banks, which is the author's father. And it's a powerful, powerful place to open and process those emotions. And at this moment, I'm not quite sure. So if you could give me some more details about exactly what you're referring to that happened yesterday,
if
you could be more specific.
Can I jump in there on that?
Please,
maybe you can help, because I really
take
struggled to articulate it. I was trying to tell Julie, and I couldn't even say it very well. She's like, call in and ask Michael and Julie. I mean, Jeannie.
So I will say what I hear, and then Michael can clarify if I'm off of it again. What the gentleman was saying about the Inside Out was he was talking about how the emotions organize the thinking, and use the example of like sadness, you know, that when sadness would touch one of the memory balls, it would change the way that Riley processed, you know, what was going on in her life. And the refinement that Michael made was it was the thought behind the emotion. And so, for instance, the example that you're giving of that you were supposed to be talking to someone and your mom came in, was that what it was?
Right.
Okay, so if it were just emotions that changed the way you saw your world, then maybe you would say, well, my agitation came up or my frustration came up, and then that changed how I saw the whole situation with my mom. When really then what Michael was saying, it's the thought behind that frustration or that irritation. So it would be, you know, mom's timing is off, or, you know, I wish she would be more considerate, you know, when she comes in and I'm on a call or something like that. So it's the thought behind the emotion. The emotion is triggered by that thought. And so it's really the thought that organizes our thinking and the way that we see the world, not the emotion. So he just did that little refinement that they were the flip side of the same coin, but that you can't just try to address the emotion itself. You have to address the thought that's behind the emotion. Am I right on that, Michael?
You're right on track. And this points to, for me, the reason why you want to be as precise and specific as possible in the goal that you use when you're doing a worksheet, a wake-up sheet. So in this specific example that you and Jeannie have just been talking about. So there could be 100 different thoughts behind the emotion of whatever the upset or the irritation was. It might be, and each one would have a, each thought would have a different goal. So the irritation, a piece of mind energy, goes into the structure, turns into a neuropeptide, strikes a cell, and when it strikes a cell, it informs the cell the quality of the thought. So if the feeling is that of irritation, then what that feeling is telling you is that this thought, when you put it into your cellular structure, is an irritant to the cell and creates a diseased condition. And the thought might be, you know, why doesn't my mother ever honor me? I.e., you know, she just walks in my house anytime and doesn't inform me she's coming. So that might be the thought that you'd be doing the worksheet on. And so the goal would be, I want mom to honor me. The thought might be, you know, my mom's always interrupting my life. And that might create this a similar feeling, but a whole different worksheet, because the goal involved there would be, I want my mother to, you know, treat me with integrity and support me. It might be, you know, that irritation might be, mom's always interrupting me. You know, right from when I was a child, I was in the middle of doing something, wanted to do something, and mom would just step right in and yank me out of the space. And what I wanted mom to do was to honor my choices. So that might be the goal that we work with. So the importance of really, and this is the skill set we're inviting people to do, is as opposed to denying and dissociating from this content, which most have done, you know, most of our generations previously, at least as far as we can tell, or I can tell, pretty much have kept that stuff in abeyance, have kept it in the dissociated mind. So learning to decode each of those thoughts so that we can tap into what's the goal that will bring the most powerful forgiveness result in this situation, and what you put in that blank in number three is key, and decoding the thought behind the neuropeptide. So, you know, if you look at the movie in Inside Out, all this sadness that's taken over Joy's life in the movie is resolved when she can tell the truth about her sadness, when she can speak the thought in the presence of love that her sadness was all about. And, you know, it's a really fine point in the movie, but if you remember, you know, she goes to her parents and she's in tears and she's like, you know, I had the goal. Mom actually framed the goal for her, and she said it earlier in the movie, you know, dad's busy, so we're going to be dad's perfect little girl, and we're not going to interrupt daddy's need to work. And so she feels dissed, and that feeling of dissed is, and it looks like in the movie, it's like, I'm not important, and I'm not allowed to tell the truth about what I'm feeling or thinking. And the resolution comes when she's able to go to her parents, and of course they're holding the space of love, and she's able to tell the truth about the thoughts that created her sadness. I miss my home. I miss my friends. I miss being able to play hockey. And she's safe enough to do that instead of having to fulfill the goal that mom framed for her of being the perfect little girl that doesn't interrupt dad's day, doesn't interfere with his life.
Right.
Does that all fit and kind of give you the refinement you're looking for?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And the thought I had when Jeannie was explaining it was the first thought I had was, does every thought have a goal attached to it? And then that's exactly what you said. Your next sentence was, yeah, and every thought has a goal. And that's where I was getting, if I look at the agitation emotion, okay, so I'm agitated, that had a gob of thoughts. And I'm thinking, okay, well, there's a lot of goals underneath my agitation. So I was, and you hit a lot of them. I want my mom to respect me. I want her to have integrity. I want her to call first and ask if she can come over. I want to be honored.
No.
So all of those were in that whole thought train, like a lot of things firing off at the same time. So that
exactly.
really gets it clear to me. It's if every one of those has a neuropeptide, I really want to have all of those be transformed. Cancel that goal, get back to, I honor my mother, I love my mother, I am the space of love in her presence, and,
yes.
there's nothing missing, nothing wrong, it's just timing, and making requests, and not having, or having, instead of not having, having that peace that, I'm in line with my divine source, I'm not, there's no conflict here except for what my brain is firing off these little challenges that I have. So that helps me kind of put it on the court, so to speak, and hear it in
yes.
what's going on language. It always just helps me so much to have that language like, okay, here's what's going on, and this is how you break it apart because it gets me back to the goal and gets
right.
me present to anytime I have fear, anger, pain, I'm the one. It's not happening over
what's
there. It's happening over here.
Exactly. What's driving my mind. And I liked that precise psychological language that used of that gob of thoughts. That's really, right on track. And it that really explains why Yeshua said, now, around this issue, you're probably going to do 77 times 70 worksheets because there's a whole, accumulation of mind energy that comes from, maybe 1,000 experiences we've had with mom or authority figures, and that there were 1,000 experiences in my genes that mom had with her mom and authority figures and her mom had with, and all of those energetic dynamics contribute to the end result of what I call my perceptual construct, or the world I see that I think is out there, that's really in here, and the necessity to collapse it in order to bring present love and to live out of that present love while those energetic dynamics that I've still not yet resolved move in me, and it's desirable to have them move because that's the only way we get to resolve them.
Right. Well, and I have to say that I've had a miracle, with my mother. I mean, through this work, it's so different. How it used to be, they say in AA, here's how it used to be. Here's what happened and here's how it is now. So they're looking at saying, okay, before the 12 steps, I was a drunk and a blah, 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 blah. And after the 12 steps, I have, or here's what happened. I lost my house, my car, my wife, and now here's where I am after having done the steps. And so it's like, that's how I feel about this work. It's like, here's how my relationship with my mother, how it was, constant conflict, constant irritation, kind of a train wreck, if you will, cancel universe, if we don't want any of those, but like that. And then what happened
right.
is I came to Heartland and I've been doing this work and she's like a completely different person. Isn't that interesting how she changed?
Yes. It is interesting how they change when we, and one of the things to recognize in that context is that everything that moves in us, every informational molecule that moves in us, let's say that when it strikes the cell creates frustration or irritation, literally as it's moving in us, that field moving sets up an energy wave that sprays on them. And when it sprays on them, it tends to reinforce the whole behavior pattern that set the thing up in the first place. And when we can become the one that interrupts the pattern inside of us, and in that situation that yesterday, literally because there had been irritation moving in me, I spare irritation on this person, who then, of course, responds to that irritation with some of their own. When I can forgive, remove that irritation, and make the choice to bring in the presence of love, then literally when love is moving in me, I'm spraying active love on them. And they're going to be different. And also, my perceptual construct, if it's coming out of brain cells filled with irritation, I'm going to have a certain perceptual construct that is going to be the filter through which I see them. And when I shift that content, I'm literally generating a whole different world that I see and overlay on them. And so as those both of those things shift and change, everything changes, and that's the beauty and the gift of this genius mind of Yeshua that said, here's how you forgive, folks. Here it is. And, yep, you might have to do it 77 times, 70 times, and the benefits will be just beyond comprehension.
It really is. We had supper together last night, and it was the most beautiful experience. And I got home, and it was like you know how when you have one of those remarkable, you have like a moment of clarity and you identify that it's no longer how it used to be and you're not even sure when it shifted or how it shifted or what happened. But how it used to be was for me to have dinner with my mother was quite an ordeal because I don't eat the way she eats, and she would push me to try to eat. I mean, she wanted me to eat what she eats. So it would sometimes be quite, you know, a challenge. And, I mean,
so
it was like...
You might want to interrupt that thought.
Interrupt that thought, yes.
Yeah. And if you look at what you just said, and it might be worth going back and just listening to the show again, you might want to catch the subtle denial involved.
What is it?
Okay. So as you described what you called an ordeal, something moving and happening inside of you, was happening because of what Mom did.
Yes. Okay. Perfect.
And my offering is that the ordeal, whatever that means precisely, that sounds like a whole complex, another one of those gobs, whatever that ordeal was moving in you because it's in you, and Mom was the trigger for it. When I speak about I'm having this ordeal because of what Mom says or does, then I'm in denial. I'm thinking and speaking as though something outside of me is causing this inside of me. And when I do that,
I want help with this one.
Is
there somebody else waiting to talk on the switchboard?
No, we don't need that. You're on. We got all the time you need.
We're here
to support you. So
I want to help with this because this has been. What I said means I have not gotten over it. Like I'm still making it be her thing in my head.
And you were describing the way it used to be.
Yeah.
So you were saying when I used to have dinner with my mom. So it may be something resolved, but I was just pointing out for your sake and for the audience's sake, especially if there's somebody new that really hasn't gotten the subtlety of how denial works. So you were speaking in past tense, so it may be something that you have actually totally resolved already, but speaking in past tense, there was the denial of, you know, I had this ordeal because Mom, blah, 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 blah. And just to be aware, watch our language. You know, Shakespeare says, my words fly up, my thoughts remain below. If I keep watching my words will tell me when I'm hiding something. And I'm hiding something when I say, that out there caused this in here.
Okay, so that's what I want help with.
Work to do. Yeah.
Okay, so that out there caused this in here. So here's what used to happen that didn't happen last night. And I was, when I got home, I had this epiphany like, wow, not one time did she do blah, blah, blah. So what she used to always do that I think is her, not me, still, I have that still in my brain. Like I noticed I'm saying ordeal, but yet I was surprised that it didn't happen. Pleasantly surprised, like an epiphany, but still it resonated with me when you said denial, because I had this fear, like I'm expecting it to go down, and I was surprised it didn't. So how it would be, okay.
I would mind you.
Go ahead.
So how about, I love it when I have dinner with my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes to every extreme possible to bring up the ordeal in me. Ouch. There it is. There it is. That's the closing down of the energy field and the gift she gives you. So if you use that, you can artificially work through that one rather than having to create that circumstance again. And then you could go have dinner with mom, and mom could do all those behaviors. And because the ordeal's no longer in you, you can just sit there and be love and have a delightful time with mom. And let
and
mom
that
be
has
gone.
Been happening a lot. But then I could really hear when you said that, I was like, nah, it's not gone yet. Because, okay, good.
Yeah, well, that's the 77 times 70 times that Yeshua, you know, there are layers.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, you may be getting down to a genetic layer that maybe isn't even yours. And when we can access
Listen, there's food issues on both sides all the way back, so it wouldn't surprise me if this is carbon-based memory major.
Right.
I mean, we got the Karen Carpenter disease going on everywhere. So, I mean, I'm probably, anyway, I don't want to say that. I'm healing. I'm doing my healing work.
Awesome. Well, we're here holding the space for it. And
the
fact that you're doing your healing work is an awesome gift to us, because you're refining your ability to ask the right questions. And with those questions, we all get to play with the answer. So thank you. That's awesome.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to get to work now.
All right. Enjoy that mind shifter. I'm sure you'll have fun with it.
Yeah, it's a good one. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
By the way, for anybody that's new to the show, what is a mind shifter? A mind shifter is a tool that we use that allows you to kind of vicariously go through a situation without having to actually experience it. So what you do, you know, if that mind shifter is yours, you know, if you've got a similar situation going on with someone, the reason why you'd use such an insane thought as the one that I just gave to Tracy is that you can use that thought, and what you do is you take a page, a piece of paper, and split it down the middle, and on the left-hand side of the page, you write the thought, and then on the right-hand side of the page, you write everything that comes up in your mind in response to it. The human mind works by a law called the law of resonance. And the law of resonance, simply stated, goes like this. When two energy fields are in tune or in harmony with each other, there's an exchange of information between them. So if somebody comes along and resonates brain cells in me, then and those brain cells contain pain, here I am waiting for that person to come along and bring up my pain. Whereas I can short-circuit the whole process by choosing a thought that will act like the stimulus in a real situation to resonate that part of my mind. If I say, don't think about the color of your car, what resonates in brain cells? So when I take a thought like that, like for instance, in our Mind Shifters at Still Point Breathing workshop, I always use the same example because it opens a space for people who have money issues, which is most everybody. And the one I use is, I always earn twice as much as I can spend. And most people's response to that is, who are you trying to kid? Are you crazy? That's baloney. And then you write the money shifts again. I always earn twice as much as I can spend. But that's crazy. I've never been able to pay my bills. In fact, they're threatening to take away my car. Are you breathing? No. Well, take a breath. Breathe and write the mind shifter again. I always earn twice as much as I can spend. But that's ridiculous. I can remember as a kid, you know, I mean, our family's never had enough money. We've always been in poverty. I always earn twice as much as I can spend. God, you know, that's so crazy that there was so much trauma in our lives. I can remember, God, I remember Mom and Dad and that big fight they had. And, you know, it was all over money. And Dad walked out the door and I never saw him again. Bingo. Core issue resonated and brought to the surface with the opportunity to work through it by allowing or artificially setting up a vibration that matches what you know you need to deal with, and it unpacks or resonates or opens up that neuropeptide that contains that thought that when it strikes the cell generates so much pain. And when it opens up, you get a chance to bring love to it and change it. And now that the thought's changed, that pain is gone. You're freed from it. And that's how forgiveness works. So it opens a space for those things to move and be resolved within and not having to go out into the world and, you know, create the circumstance for it to happen. And if you don't do your work, you know, the purpose of the world, the way the Creator set the world up, it seems, through resonance, with this genius piece of information, resonance, and then everything we hold in us is an energy moving in us that sets up a field, that it's set up to kick you in the limitation. If there's a disease energy in you, if there's something that's creating a limitation on your ability to function as the presence of love and consciously create your life, life is going to, because of this resonance, deliver someone who's going to do a behavior that kind of acts like a mind shifter. But you can do it a whole lot easier to just recognize, okay, I'm going to use a mind shift to work through that one. I'm not going to wait for somebody to come along and kick me in that limitation again. Like, you know, I've had enough of that one. So it's a powerful, wonderful thing to have some tools to short-circuit the process of healing and open up the space to really recognize who we are as love and function out of that. And we're down to the last minute or so, so I'm just going to invite you once again, if you're in the Asheville, North Carolina area, we'll be at Unity of Blue Ridge, Mills River, doing communication. Did you hear what I think I said tonight? Tomorrow night, codependence to interdependence. Saturday, mind shifters and still point breathing. And then we'll be heading on to Franklin, North Carolina, if you happen to be in the Franklin area, about an hour and a half from here. On Sunday, we're going to do the Sunday service. And Sunday afternoon, why is this happening to me again? Monday night and Tuesday night, I think we're doing Empowered to Heal and Naturopathic Keys to Health there at Franklin Spiritual Light Center. And then we're actually going to be traveling. I'm going to get some dental work done, and G is going to take some time with her dad and her mom, if you would hold the space for them. They've been going through some physical challenges. So if everybody just sends a little bit of that sweet vibration of love toward Jeannie's mom and dad, Jim and Alice, that would be much appreciated. We'll be heading up into Indiana and actually spending a week with Michael J. in Indiana. And then heading to Fellowship for Today and Unity in Lansing, and then Unity in
Ada,
Michigan.
Ada.
And then to Muskegon. So we're on it, and the 16-day codependence to interdependence communication practicum, fall colors just outside of Lansing. It'll be an awesome time of the year to be in Lansing, October the 12th to the 27th. Come and join us. In the meantime, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.